This is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy KCEI, and I'm here in Santa Fe talking to Greg Mello of the Los Alamos Study Group to just catch up on what's happening at Los Alamos and the proposed expansion of pit production, which is being pushed by our congressional delegation and other national interests. So, Greg, tell us where we are in the timeline and what Los Alamos is proposing.
Yes. Thanks so much for having me, Robin. And it's always a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. Los Alamos has never had an industrial mission of any enduring nature.
It's a research facility.
Yes. It's always been a research and development and prototyping facility. This could change. In fact, it's supposed to change. That's the under the so-called program of record, Los Alamos is supposed to install the equipment and make the facility modifications to be start making up to 30 nuclear weapon cores per year.
These are commonly called plutonium pits.
Yes, pits. There is right now pending a possible decision, a decision that could possibly give Los Alamos a mission to produce 80 or even more pits per year, which would entail considerable construction. In fact, construction's involved in all of this. So there's an ongoing program, and then there could be a supercharged version if on May 11th, the director of the NNSA, the National Nuclear Security Administration, picks Los Alamos for the larger pit mission.
And remind us that there's been some studies by the government on what would be the best location. And actually, in that study, Los Alamos was not favored. South Carolina was one of the favored locations. There's already a partial facility built there that could be converted.
Yes, yes. So there have been, South Carolina always comes up as a place to do industrial plutonium activities because it was designed to be an industrial plutonium site where plutonium was made. So they have laboratories and they have big facilities. There is a huge new plutonium handling facility that's under construction called the Mixed Oxide Fuel Fabrication Facility. It's probably three times the size of Los Alamos's main plutonium facility. It's for a program which the Obama administration and then the Trump administration would like to cancel. So the facility, they've already spent maybe $4 or $5 billion on it, and opinions differ as to how complete the facility is. It's all enclosed, and most of the money is in the equipment, which has yet to be installed. Some equipment is installed. So the cheapest alternative for NNSA involves repurposing that facility. But there's a big fight in Congress over whether the program that facility was designed for, which is to take surplus plutonium and turn it into nuclear reactor fuel, whether that program should continue.
And from what I've read, that basically the nuclear power plants don't really want this fuel. They just don't. It just doesn't turn out to be practical.
Yes, they don't really want it. The Tennessee Valley Authority is tentatively one of the reactors has said they'll take it, but it's different fuel. It has different characteristics. It represents some safety issues and operational issues that increase costs.
Right. Meanwhile, there's been a pushback from our congressional delegation, Heinrich Udall, Congressman Ray Lujan, to say, wait a second, we need those pits here in New Mexico. We need the jobs. We need the, and they actually passed in Congress a bill that made it difficult to choose Savannah River, South Carolina, as the site. Explain that movement by the congressional delegation.
Sure. Yes, our Democrats are four square behind this transformation of Los Alamos into an industrial facility. Not the total, it wouldn't be totally industrial,
yeah.
But really, once you start down that road, that mission has a huge effect on everything that happens. It increases the overhead, it increases the waste production, the risk, the security, and so it makes it just that much more difficult to do science, let's say.
Now let's step back and let the listeners really understand what these pits are. These are the core of a nuclear bomb that you, well, you explain it, it exactly how it works. There's explosives around that core that cause it to go into...
Implode.
And, yeah. And causes explosion.
Sure. So they... A plutonium pit is like a matryoshka doll that has layers. The innermost layer is the fissile material, and it is compressed. The whole thing is surrounded by high explosives, which are detonated in a controlled manner, and a symmetric shockwave hits the various layers of the pit successively, and then the whole thing collapses in and becomes supercritical, highly dense. And before all of this happens, gas, tritium, and deuterium is injected into the core of the pit through a tube. And then it is an atomic bomb.
Right. Now, previously, a lot of these pits, I mean, they were produced at various places during the 40s, but production moved to Rocky Flats in Colorado. And they produced thousands of pits, I believe. And,
yes.
And it was a disaster, basically. I mean, they didn't follow safety procedures. There was a giant fire. And basically, in the end, the FBI came down and closed them down. Explain why Rocky Flats was such an environmental disaster.
Well, it's a very difficult thing to do, to make these pits, especially to do so on an industrial scale, to actual deadlines. So, you know, it's not just the casting and the machining and the welding together. It's also recycling the old pits. It's purification of this incredibly radiotoxic metal. It's all the radio assay, the chemistry, the waste handling, all the shop functions. It was a big sprawling factory, and it will have, doing this anywhere will have serious complications. And I think a lot of people, not just me and the rest of us at the Los Alamos Study Group, doubt very much that Los Alamos can do this mission safely.
Right. Now explain again, like, what is an actual pit? What is, like, the size of it? I've heard that there's, like, 1,200 pits sitting around waiting to be used. It's not like they don't have pits. Make nuclear bombs, right?
Well, there's about, if all told, there's probably about 23,000 pits.
23,000 pits?
So of, let's see, there's 3,800 in nuclear weapons in the arsenal, which can be used not tomorrow, but let's say within a month.
Yeah.
Then there's a big stockpile of extra pits, which are of modern types, which you could make weapons around. So you could take them to the Pantex plant, and using blueprints and everything and jigs, you could start making nuclear weapons again. Then there's a whole bunch of surplus pits, which are kind of old style, and a lot of those have been declared surplus, and those ones are going to be dissolved in acid or hot hydrogen. That's Los Alamos' preferred method. And that's the other, it's an even bigger industrial mission, which Los Alamos has quietly claimed, which would be to process 35 tons of this surplus plutonium through the same facility that they're making pits in. And so it's, that's a big job, and that was
so
originally
recycling those pits, basically.
They would be recycling the pits, either toward new pits, some toward mixed oxide fuel, if that path is
goes
chosen,
on, yeah.
Or others to mix with a secret sauce called Stardust and for disposal at the WIP site.
Now, their claim is that these pits age and if they're sitting around for a certain amount of time, they're no longer usable. Explain, how does a pit age? What is the process?
I think that we have physicists and people who say, yes, if it sits around a long time, it becomes unusable. A long time means a century.
Right.
And so we now know that all According to the Department of Defense and the DOE in a joint report, all U.S. pits have a lifetime of at least 85 to 100 years, depending on the pit.
So those pits that are sitting around and supposedly aging, they're actually good till 2060-something?
Yes, because the ones that are in the stockpile now, where the oldest ones were made about 1978, but most of them were made in the 80s when Rocky Flats was churning out pits.
Right.
So, so our present arsenal of pits is good till at least the 2060s.
Yeah, go ahead.
I should say that there's more than one layer in pits.
Yeah.
And other things can go wrong with pits. So they could get corroded, for example.
So some of that composite material that's circling the plutonium.
Yes, there could be beryllium shell. Beryllium shell could corrode in the presence of moisture. And, well, you can replace those. And Los Alamos does this too. So that is called pit rebuild in the business and does not involve processing and making the plutonium part of the pit, which is the most difficult and dangerous part.
Yeah. Now, this facility, I mean, some years ago, they wanted to build a gigantic football-size concrete facility to handle all this plutonium, and the cost kept skyrocketing, and you filed a lawsuit against it with NEPA, and in the end, the costs were so great that Congress basically canceled that program. There's a lot of reasons that they did. And in that plan, there was this RAD building that they actually built, which was supposed to be like the research facility for this whole project. And then there was this giant plutonium storage facility that was crucial to the whole mission. Now they're proposing to use the RAD lab to actually build the pits, which was not designed for that purpose. Explain what would be...
Well, sort of. The demise, let's go back a second, the demise of the large building, it's interesting. Yes, people say it got too expensive. We just got an email from an assistant secretary of defense in charge of this, and he said there's no, cost is not an issue.
Oh, really?
And I think that that's true and has been true. Cost is really not an issue if it came to the reliability of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. And what is not talked about is not so much the cost. The cost was high. It was that they didn't need it.
Okay.
That's why we got STRATCOM on our side in the end, and the Obama administration used the Strategic Command to brief the skeptics saying we don't need this facility because the pits are fine.
Yeah. And that's kind of the situation now. There's this group who knows exactly who's behind it, but they really thinks they need to build these pits. When you actually go and talk to the Department of Defense or the Navy or the people that would actually use these pits, they don't seem to want them either, right?
Well, it gradually the notion that the United States has to have a pit factory is become more common, say, in the last 8 years or so. And, the Russians have a big pit factory.
Yeah.
So because North Koreans have a pit factory. And everyone has one except us. That's what they say. And, of course, what they don't say is that we don't need one because the craftsmen and technicians at Rocky Flats did an outstanding job at the cost of their own health.
Right.
And so we don't need any, if a human generation is, let's say, 20 years, we don't need any for two generations.
So, I mean, part of the argument that they have is that we have to keep making them because we'll forget how to make them or something like that.
I mean,
that if you don't keep training people with the skills to do these pits, when we do need them, supposedly, if we ever do, then the people won't be around.
This is an important argument, and I think there's some merit to it. But you have to peel away the layers of that, and we haven't done that yet, but the outline is something like this, that first of all, there's lots of things to do with plutonium that are worthwhile doing, like environmental cleanup. And you can do activities related to surplus plutonium, and you have a big part of the skill set already in place. You have some facilities, you have some skills, training, and The question, you could make the question on the other side. Do you suppose that you could run a factory for 40 years at extreme expense that involved personal danger and a career so specialized that once you go in, you could never get out for a product that was not actually needed?
No, it's crazy.
Would that actually be a feasible managerial thing to do? So I think that there's arguments on both sides there.
There's other solutions.
And if the United States would actually forget how to machine plutonium, alloyed plutonium is much like copper. It's not, it's very dangerous, but you know, they made pits without...
They didn't know how to make pits when they started, right?
Not at all. And by, you know, June of 1945, they knew all about how to make pits.
Right,
and
right.
They use the same alloy that they do today.
And of course, India and Pakistan and Korea, they've all figured out how to do it.
The idea that you would completely forget would imply that the United States would not be any kind of a technological country. And if that were the case, we would really should be thinking about bigger problems that we will have at that point.
Now, you have actually filed a Freedom of Information request. There is actually a study that...
A lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is information that the government has that shows these pits are not needed, and that's what you're trying to...
We have a pile of Freedom of Information Act requests in. Every time there's some report mentioned, we file a FOIA request. But one thing that particularly interests us is the analysis of whether Los Alamos is a good place to do this.
And that's what you requested.
Yes, we received a little tidbit of information yesterday about this, which is that there's a lot of people in Washington that think that this is actually a pretty good analysis, that NNSA has exceeded itself, 400 pages of analysis about the pros and cons of where and how to do this mission. And boy, we'd love to see that. I think the public should see it.
Obviously, some part of that would have to be redacted or whatever.
Yeah, it has floor plans and things like that. So we did, those could be taken out.
So that's one thing. The other thing is that why is Los Alamos such a dangerous place? Just, its location. Explain why it being located on this one of the largest volcanoes in the United States.
Sure.
Why that's...
Well, let's go back to the very beginning. When they started Los Alamos, they thought that 150 people, that would be scientists, technicians, guards, and all of their dependents, would be enough for the Los Alamos site during World War II.
Yeah.
And so they were going to use the ranch buildings that were already there. But, of course, it ballooned way beyond that. It's isolated. The mesas are very narrow, which means you can't co-locate like facilities, which is important for security and for environmental reasons.
Yeah.
So if you transport plutonium from point A to point B, you have shut down the road, which makes it difficult. The geotechnical aspects of the site are very unfavorable. There's, at the plutonium facility, there's about a 60-foot layer of unconsolidated volcanic ash, part of the Bandelier Tuff, but it's not welded. It's the part that doesn't form a cliff. It forms a slope, and it's very powdery.
Hmm.
And that material is compressible. It may collapse if water gets on it, like during construction, and be unstable. It has very little resistance shear resistance, so a heavy building on this would tend to slide back and forth in an earthquake. There's very little space on that mesa. It could slide right off the mesa. Because there's not much of a buttress on that side. There's just the width of the road, practically, between the building site and the only real building site they have, and 2 Mile Canyon, part of a Pajarito Canyon system.
Yeah. So it's inherently dangerous because of earthquakes, the geological formation.
Yes.
In the narrowness of these
When they started this, they had no idea that Los Alamos was so seismically important. If you get north of Los Alamos town, and especially if you get up in an airplane or at a height of land and sight along the back road, you can see the earthquake fault very plainly.
Okay. Okay, well, let's step back. There's a timeline. There's supposed to be a decision in May about whether they're going to go forward with it. Explain that.
So this law, which Senators Heinrich and Udall and Ben Ray Lujan crafted and got through their respective houses of Congress, sets up a decision timetable to get rolling on this project because they want the money rolling. And they joined by neoconservatives in the other party that want a bit factory, and they're very frustrated that we don't have one.
Right.
So all these political forces came together and wrote this law that says that unless you make a decision by May 11th and meet these five criteria, which are kind of hard, then you're going to build an underground set of factory modules at Los Alamos National Laboratory, period. That's the default.
Right. If you don't decide something...
You must jump through these various hoops,
right,
and the Secretary of Defense and his designees have to agree, and the other plan, which our senators are promoting, is a kind of a modular set of factory buildings, which are sideways to the edge of the mesa. They're not as massive. They're very small, but because they're very small, they have poor... they're costly per square foot.
Right.
And so you have to build many of them, and then you end up, you don't have the advantage of them being cheap or anything.
Right.
They're about $1 billion apiece.
So, I mean, if people want to speak out about this, and I mean, let's get back to one other question. It's like, supposedly this brings all this money to New Mexico, and we've talked about this before. It doesn't really bring money. It brings money to the scientists, the people that work at Los Alamos, to the nuclear contractors. That money mostly goes out of New Mexico. The surrounding counties are still among the poorest counties in the whole country.
Right.
So,
in fact, I think it's worse than that. I think there's a lot of negatives in terms of our political process, in terms of our priorities of our political leaders, our the labor market. So if you have skills, you can make three times.
Right.
Triple your salary, go to work up on the hill, and leave whatever else you might have been doing in Taos or in the Espanola Valley. I mean,
you could have been working on renewable energy somewhere else.
Exactly.
You could have been doing solving water problems.
Sure.
There's so many problems in New Mexico that we need worked on. Instead, you're working on making nuclear weapons.
When I worked at the state, we would joke, it was completely accurate. You could go to work at the lab, make two or three times the money, and work half as hard or one third as hard, and just spend your time in the outdoors and so forth.
So this is coming up. What do you recommend that people do? Now, in your newsletter, you spoke about there's different ways of influencing the public, and you say that writing letters to the editor is one of the most effective.
Yes, it is. It's really a little bit neglected. It's easy in the sense that it's not necessarily easy to write a beautiful letter.
Right.
That takes, a little
skill,
little skill, a little practice, and you have to be a little patient with yourself to get one that really, but it's better to get started. It doesn't have to be perfect. So it's
Less than 150 words, basically.
Usually, yes. You may have more in Taos. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah.
Short is good.
Yeah, yeah, short is good. And if you keep at it, then you can take, so the word limitation is less important if you do multiple letters.
Right.
And that influences not just the readers of the opinion page, it influences the editors of the news section also.
Right.
They say, oh gosh, people do really care about this. And of course the politicians read it and your fellow activists read it.
Right.
And other people in the community, and people just don't know about this. And I think that's one of the most important things right now is that we have this idea that things are going on just, like normal. We human beings think this way. This is really a big change. And it's not going to be normal when 35 metric tons of plutonium are rolling through up on the hill. They'll have their mobile constitution-free zones with the guns, the guards,
It's much easier to stop it now than it will be later.
Like crazy hard to stop something when it's already going.
Right. Now, you were telling us about kind of an effort that is kind of disturbing. There's like a whole series of events happening this summer involving multiple museums, the opera. It's like a romanticizing of Los Alamos and the formation of the bomb. Give us an outline of what's going on and why people should care about this, and it's dangerous.
Yes. Well, of course, the opera's putting on Dr. Atomic, which I have not seen the opera or read the entire libretto, but it centers in substantial part on the inner anguish of Robert Oppenheimer. There's lectures, there's a lecture series, which will also focus in part on this. So there'll be art displayed at the Museum of New Mexico and elsewhere, at the Phil Space Gallery, for example, that there'll be anti-nuclear art at the Phil Space Gallery. And let's see, what else? So the
Bradbury Museum.
Yes, we've got the three nuclear museums in Los Alamos, counting the national park, and now with the Museum of New Mexico in on the act, that's four. And then, of course, we have a fifth in Albuquerque, which is big. So we got five bomb museums or parks. We have the opera. We have lectures. And all of this attempts, in a way, to domesticate the bomb and convert what are actual historical events, both in the past and current, billions, in fact, more than $1 trillion is being invested in nuclear weapons in this country over the next 30 years. These decisions are being made right now, as we discussed. And it's all being somehow converted into a very entertaining art revolving around people's doubts and guilt. It's a kind of, I think it's quite perverse, really.
Yeah. And you've talked about this really needs to become a national and international issue. It's not just a New Mexico issue. The idea to commit to making more nuclear weapons at this time is, you know, we should be banning them. And there is this United Nations treaty that bans them.
To ban nuclear weapons.
So this is not the way to go.
No, it's not. And I think that, we're in a time of what could be planet-ending crises if we don't rise to them. And the money for all this is being borrowed, of course.
Right.
The CBO projects that the interest on the national debt is going to exceed military spending by 2023.
Yeah.
And that means that domestic programs are going to be eclipsed. It's a good time for the Indians to rise up. It's a good time for all of us. We need to kind of examine our habits of civic participation, get out of our comfortable little niches and grottos, and step up.
Right. Okay, well, we have to wind up now. It's always great to talk to you, Greg. Tell your contact information, your website.
Sure. Greg Mello, email gmello at lasg.org. Our website, lasg.org. And our phone number is 505-265-1200.
And on the website, you can sign up for your newsletter. You send out quite regularly very informative little newsletters about different aspects of these issues.
Thank you, Robin.
And Greg has worked on this for decades. He used to work for the New Mexico Environment Department, monitoring Los Alamos. And so he's really developed a real knowledge of how everything works up there.
It's pretty mysterious.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much. I've been talking to Greg Mello of the Los Alamos Study Group. This is Rob McCullough of KCEI 90.1 FM, Red River Taos.